and was draped with an American flag. The president had placed his hand on the flag, taken a knee, and bowed his head in prayer. He had then stood, saluted, and walked back to the waiting aircraft. The media suggested the president was paying his respects to an Air Force doctor who had led the hospital through its darkest hours. The president had then walked the halls of medical centers, first in Richardson and then in Aurora. He wore no PPE. He shook hands, gave hugs, and offered hope. Hope was something that Hafez Qassem knew was a course of action reserved for those without viable alternatives. Would the Americans grab him in broad daylight? The FBI would. They would come screaming in, driving black Suburbans with their badges out and guns drawn for a very public arrest. What the FBI would not do was send him a severed head in the mail. This was something else. A different type of animal was hunting him. He'd exited the embassy and passed the Malaysian and Egyptian embassies on International Court Northwest. He walked north to avoid the Israeli embassy. He moved on to a wooded path near the Austrian embassy to cut through to 36th Street. From there, it was a short walk to his residence. At first, Qassem thought he was having a heart attack. When he felt the second impact, he knew it was something else. His neurological system shut down as his brain lost the ability to communicate with his muscles, and he toppled to the ground face first. He rolled to his side and grabbed at the impact area. That was exactly what the designers of the weapon had intended. Qassem's hand connected with the exposed wire attached to the four barbs of the 12-gauge projectile. His hand convulsed. He was unable to pull it away, and another 500 volts surged through his system. Logan cycled his Taser X-12 Mossberg and emerged from his hide site 40 feet off the path. He was joined by a second operator who did the same, both quickly approaching the Iranian spy and ready to hit him again with the 500 volts of the specially designed less-than-lethal shotgun rounds. A third man approached with an Axon Taser 7 in the low ready. When he was 10 feet away, he pressed the trigger and sent the attached barbs into the downed man, shooting 3,500 volts through his body. His two partners slung their Taser X-12 X-Rep shotguns and quickly zip-tied the man's hands and feet. He would be dead weight for at least 20 seconds. They carried him 30 yards to 36th Street Northwest, where a flower delivery truck had backed over the curb, its rear doors already open. They loaded him inside and attached him to a chair with restraints before exiting into the street, securing the doors behind them. Chapter 71. Qassem opened his eyes and attempted to raise his arms to the areas on his chest and stomach that burned, but was unable to move. As his eyes adjusted to the dim light, he became aware that he was in a moving vehicle and that his legs, arms, and head were strapped to some sort of a chair. He was not alone. A figure was sitting on a bench seat across from him, a figure dressed in a fully encapsulating orange biohazard suit. Strapped to the face of the man wearing it was a black rubber mask attached to a self-contained breathing apparatus beneath the suit. Even in the dim light, Qassem recognized the man behind the mask.
"I know you, don't I?"
Qassem asked.
"I think you do. I take it you make it a point to know the target when you send a hit team to assassinate him,"
Reese said through the internal microphone.
"James Reese, you killed 11 of my men."
"I did."
"I should have sent more."
"You should have sent professionals."
"Ah, yes. Fortunately for you, professionals are hard to come by in this country.
You've used amateurs before." Qassem paused and attempted to tilt his head, but it remained clasped to the chair.
"I am a diplomat, Mr. Reese. As I am sure you know, you are in violation of international law, specifically the Vienna Convention I have diplomatic immunity.
You are a spy. We have a separate set of rules for spies.
Usually, one would need proof of some sort. You wouldn't want to create an international incident. Even with evidence, you can only expel me.
Usually, that would be true, but this is far from a usual case.
Do you plan to torture me, Mr. Rhys?
Your fate is in your hands, Qasem. I know you planned the Marburg attack, that you passed Variant U to Dr. Ali Reza Ansari of Biodyne Medical Systems, that you wanted us to think it was a respiratory spread virus that would kill 90% of the country in an attempt to get us to trigger an eradication protocol that has been in place since the beginning of the Cold War. Qasem remained silent.
And there is something else, Rhys said, picking up a photograph next to him.
It's grainy, and it might be difficult to see in this light, but I think you will recognize the man in the photo. He's aged 20 years, but I'm confident you know him.
Rhys held up the photo in his left hand, illuminating it with a small streamlight stylus penlight. The photo was indeed grainy, black and white and in low resolution.
That could be anyone, Mr. Rhys.
But it isn't anyone, Qasem. It was taken in Portland, Maine on September 10, 2001, at the same restaurant that also captured photos of two men who would be dead the next day.
Oh, what happened to them?
They flew a plane into the North Tower of the World Trade Center.
I was in Iran in September 2001,
Qasem said, in a voice devoid of emotion. Just prior to midnight that same day, this man crossed the border into Canada. Rhys continued, holding up another picture. It was still black and white, but the resolution was better. Facial recognition technology was still in its infancy when these were taken, but it has improved significantly over the years.
He does not look familiar.
Look closer, Qasem.
I'm sure you will recognize him,
Rhys said. Here he is checking into the Montreal Airport Marriott Hotel a few hours later. He had a flight scheduled for the following day, but of course flights were grounded for 3 days, so he stayed in the hotel and took an evening flight to Frankfurt on September 14th.
A couple of blurry photographs of a Middle Eastern-looking man you say are from September 2001 mean nothing.
Oh, to the contrary. It means everything when that man re-enters the United States as a diplomat of a foreign nation and has access to the diplomatic pouch and is on U.S. soil at the same time a virus is unleashed on the 20th anniversary of the most devastating terrorist attack in the nation's history.
It wasn't released,
Qasem countered.
I heard your president tell the world it was from Angola, and that it burned itself out after an early spike when it was at its most potent.
I heard that too, Qasem. Did you believe it?
Why would I question it?
Because you brought Marburg variant U into the United States in a diplomatic pouch. You passed it to Dr. Ansari, who then replicated it in a lab in Denver and unleashed it through surrogates to simulate a naturally occurring respiratory spread virus.
That seems far-fetched, Mr. Rhys.
It does, which is why I want just a little more information from you. Rhys set the photographs to the side and opened a nylon case.
I know nothing about this, and I will not be coerced into taking responsibility for 9/11. Everyone knows it was the work of Al-Qaeda and Bin Laden.
Rhys made a production of taking out an IV bag and hanging it just behind Qasem on a hook on the wall of the van. He removed medical scissors and cut the left sleeve off Qasem's shirt to expose the arm.
What are you doing?
The Iranian intelligence officer asked, trying in vain to pull his arms and legs from the restraint.
Do you know who you killed that day, Qasem?
I killed no one.
You certainly did. You may not have flown the planes, but you met with Mohammed Atta that night in Portland. No one was able to figure out why Atta and Alomari drove to Maine the night before their mission of death, but I know, Reese said as he attached a thin rubber band tourniquet to Kasem's upper arm.
I killed no one, Kasem repeated.
I heard you the first time. You won't mind if I forego cleaning the site, do you? Reese anchored the area by grabbing Kasem's upper forearm and pulling the skin tight with his thumb to prevent the vein from rolling. He then flipped the cap off the end of the needle and inserted it into Kasem's vein. Reese watched the flash chamber fill with blood. Keeping the needle in place, he advanced the catheter into the arm with his forefinger, exerting pressure on the inserted portion to keep it in place. He removed the rubber band on the upper arm with his right hand and attached the IV tubing to the catheter.
"Do you know why I'm wearing this suit?" Reese asked through his respirator.
Once again, the aging spy chief remained silent. Reese opened a small aluminum case and extracted a vial from the foam.
"Recognize this?" he said, holding the small, clear bottle up to the man strapped to the chair. "It's Marburg variant U."
Reese inserted a needle and extracted a milliliter of its contents. He attached it to the injection post on the side of the drip container that fed saline solution into Kasem's arm.
I know you are familiar with what this will do to you, Kasem. Unlike the innocent people you killed on 9/11 and those you killed in Aurora and Richardson, you get a choice today.
Kasem's eyes darted from the IV to his arm to his captor.
You answer my questions, and I drop you off at Dulles, and you fly home to Iran.
You don't.
I hit this plunger, and then I drop you at Fort Detrick.
The doctors there are very anxious to study the effects of Marburg variant U on the man who brought it into the country. They've only performed experiments on baboons and read the reports from the Soviet days of Dr. Ustinov slowly liquefying from the inside. That was over 30 years ago. You will add to the body of classified bioweapons research. Who knows? Maybe something we learn from watching your body decompose from within will help develop an even more formidable weapon that we unleash on Iran. Kasem felt the perspiration soaking his clothing and his bowels begin to loosen.
Your choice, Kasem. And just so you are aware, there is nothing I want to do more than hit this plunger and avenge everyone you've killed. Please give me an excuse.
What do you want to know?
I want you to confirm for me that it is you in these photos.
Kasem's eyes went to the pictures and back to Reese.
Give me an excuse, Kasem.
Reese encouraged. Kasem squeezed his eyes shut.
Authu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. I seek refuge with Allah against the Satan, the outcast.
Kasem, answer me now or become a biomedical test subject. Those doctors at Fort Detrick, they won't take you out of your misery. They will keep you alive as long as possible to prolong your misery and extract as much research data as they can.
Kasem attempted to nod his head, but the restraint kept it in place. Enjoy your stay at Fort Detrick, Reese said, raising the plunger to Kasem's face and applying pressure.
It was me,
Kasem said.
Say that again, Reese ordered.
It was me. But I only delivered the message. I didn't make the decision about 9/11. I passed along a word.
What word?
A word that triggered 9/11? Eid al-Shaytan.
Arabic?
Yes. Those Al-Qaeda Sunnis did not understand Farsi. I swear I didn't know what it was.
Somebody knew, Kasem. Somebody knew because the next day 3,000 of my countrymen would be dead.
I thought it was for an attack on the White House. A car bomb, maybe. My job was just to pass along a word and then drive to Canada. I found out about it on the news with everyone else.
But then you made the connection, didn't you, Kasem?
Kasem tried to nod.
So you waited until flights resumed and then you flew to Germany and back to Iran?
Yes.
Who ordered you to deliver the message?
Kasem's eyes darted to the syringe filled with liquid death. Not just death, but weeks of misery or bleeding through skin pores, through eye sockets, through his penis and anus, a pain no one but Allah could stop.
Jafar al-Sadiq,
Qasem whispered. Louder, Reese said.
General Jafar al-Sadiq.
Who is that?
He's now the Minister of Intelligence.
Did he plan it?
No.
But he facilitated it, didn't he? He gave the green light. You delivered the message.
Yes.
And you planned this Marburg attack.
Your country is on its knees, Commander. Your response to COVID surprised even our brightest minds. Close down your schools and businesses and destroy your economy for a virus with less than a 0.3% mortality rate? With that kind of a response, what would you do with a respiratory virus with a 90% mortality rate? I wanted to call the operation off. You were already doing such a good job destroying yourselves from within. All we needed to do was sit back and watch as COVID, race riots, and identity politics further divided an already weak nation. It's just a matter of time.
Why didn't you?
I am not the Minister of Intelligence. General al-Sadiq wanted to capitalize on the conditions set through your response to the coronavirus and riots. He has been on the front lines all his life, but he is getting old. Rumor has it that he was with Imad Mughniyeh on the hill overlooking Beirut in 83. He's killed more Americans than al-Qaeda or those ISIS fools could ever hope. He should have been more patient, but I believe he wanted to see the great Satan in ruins before he passes through the gates to paradise.
Qasem smiled.
Now, drop me at the airport and go fuck yourself.
Reese's thumb lingered over the plunger. He looked into Qasem's eyes as he began to increase downward pressure, the Iranian agent struggling in horror against the restraints. Reese pulled his thumb away and detached the syringe, carefully capping it and locking it back into its padded case. He then toggled a switch next to him on the wall and said, "Dulles." They both felt the van turn to the left. Reese looked into the eyes of the man still strapped to the chair across from him.
"You never answered my question about 9/11, Qasem."
"Which question?"
"When I asked you if you knew who else was killed that day."
To his unknowing expression, Reese answered,
"President Christensen's fiancée. Her name was Jennifer."
"So that's what you were doing in Chicago and Atlanta,"
Qasem deduced.
"And it's what I'll continue to do once you are on that plane." "You Americans,"
Qasem said, attempting to shake his head.
"You should kill me, you know."
"Don't think I won't one day, Qasem. Right now the president wants you to send the regime a message."
The van pulled to a stop, but Reese didn't move. He continued to stare into his adversary's eyes as the doors opened, and three men jumped inside, releasing Qasem from his restraints and roughly escorting him out the door and into a Goodwill store parking lot.
"You can find your way from here," one of the men said, before moving back toward a trail vehicle and getting inside.
Reese moved to the back of the van to close the doors.
"Hey, Qasem, I'll see you again, in this life or the next."
With that, Reese shut the doors and the van accelerated to the exit and onto Sunrise Valley Drive, leaving the man who delivered the order for 9/11 standing alone in the parking lot. Vic Rodriguez joined Reese on the roof of the CIA annex at Dulles. Reese stood behind a thick waist-high wall that encircled the roof.
"Think he bought it?"
Vic asked.
"Not sure. I think he bought that I wanted to kill him. That wasn't a hard sell."
"I imagine not,"
Vic said.
"You think he believed you had Marburg in that vial?"
"We'll never know."
"Which one is it?"
Vic asked, changing subjects.
"That one there,"
Reese said, pointing to an aircraft on the tarmac. Vic raised the binoculars around his neck and observed the twin-engine Beechcraft King Air prepare for takeoff.
"He's on board?"
Vic asked.
"He is. I watched him board with a few others."
"Good. We've confirmed that it's a chartered flight making a short hop to JFK. The Iranian ambassador to the UN is staying in New York, but his plane just filed a flight plan to Tehran via Madrid.
What type of aircraft? Reese asked.
A Dassault Falcon 50, French long-range business jet flown by Iranian Air Force pilots.
Reese watched the small commuter plane taxi to the end of the runway, turn, pause, and then accelerate, gathering lift under its wings until it took to the sky.
Good riddance, you son of a bitch.
Chapter 72. 1st Fighter Wing, 27th Fighter Squadron, Langley Air Force Base, Virginia. The pilots from the F-22 squadron had been scrambled before. Each time had been a false alarm. This alert was different. Operation Noble Eagle consisted mainly of F-15 Eagles and F-16 Fighting Falcons flying combat air patrols over the nation's capital, critical infrastructure, and high-profile public events. Authorized